Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And Sean, I think I should say aloha.
Oh, man. You are bragging right out the gates, man. And I have to say I envy you because you're in the land of paradise. Honolulu, that is. And so it's been a few days. How have you been enjoying yourself out there?
Sean, no reason to, you know, be a little envious or jealous. You've been there, done that. You were the first member of the Double S Express to host a show from Honolulu at the 4 p.m. hour Hawaii time.
You know, it doesn't get old either, man. Some of the pictures that you're putting out there, I'm thinking, man, I remember the surf and the waves and how beautiful it looked to be in that land of paradise. Even when it's cloudy, it still looks awesome, and you're over there having fun, but you'll be taking off here in a few hours after the show. Where are you heading?
Absolutely. We are off to the airport in 3 hours from now, and we have a flight, a red-eye tonight, a long red-eye. We leave at 11 p.m. local time, so for the West Coast listeners, that would be 2 a.m. We will be departing for Auckland, New Zealand.
It just keeps getting better for you. New Zealand, which I hear, because I've never been to New Zealand, but I hear it's just a beautiful, beautiful country.
You know, a lot of people say that have been there that it is amongst the most beautiful parts of the world. So I'm definitely going to check it out. The only downfall is that it is currently their winter because they're in the southern hemisphere and on the other side of the globe. So weather not great, but hey, I'm a Pacific Northwest guy. So a little clouds, a little rain, a little wind, I'm used to it.
Now, I have to ask you that this is the second stint, actually your third tour. This is your third tour. So how is this one any different? I mean, outside of starting out in the land of paradise.
Well, a big way that this is different. Well, number one, a lot of the players are different on both teams, the Generals and the Globetrotters. So you have to get to know the tendencies of each guy and learn names and where they're from and something about them. So that's different. Outside of that, thankfully, we have a lot more time off this tour. Now, that's to acclimate to the jet lag and the time difference and the day difference because we lose a day going to New Zealand. We don't even have June 2nd. It's gone. We arrive in New Zealand June 3rd.
And so, obviously, you're saying that a couple of the players are different. The front office, I mean, is that different as well? Because I'm thinking that if you have different front office people, maybe this group is a little more lenient and laid back than the other. Is that the case?
Oh, no. Everybody's the same in terms of the corporate structure, and it's just a great tour to be a part of and a great basketball tour to be able to share with the globe, literally. But somebody that knows a lot about basketball is with us now on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines, and let's welcome in the newest commissioner of the National Basketball League of Canada, David Magley. David, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, David, of course, here in the United States, there is the finals that are upon us. And here in Northern California, I cannot be more stoked than I am because the Golden State Warriors will be representing. You know, what's your take and who do you have winning the finals here?
Well, I actually played for Cleveland when they were called the Cleveland Cadavers because we played like stiffs 100 years ago. And, you know, I'm a sucker for that city because I think it's an amazing sports town. but just hasn't had a champion in a long while. And they had some near misses with the Browns back in the 80s. And you know, you really are seeing them as someone that would you'd love to see win. Having said that, the brand of basketball that Steve Kerr has, Golden State play, is just very appealing to the eyes. It's fun to see guys get up and down the court and use the analytics of the three-point line. And you know, a guy that was passed over, you know, like the kid from Michigan State that's doing so well at power forward is just fun. And so to see that all come together for them makes it a really compelling finals, I think.
Yeah, it should. It should be a very interesting finals. Of course, you have LeBron James, who is just the greatest basketball player today. And, of course, you have Steph Curry, who is up and coming. And you just don't like to bet against LeBron James. He just seems to find a way to win, even when he doesn't have what is considered his other components in Love. And, of course, you've got, I'm forgetting, Kyrie Irving. Who's injured right now. And so, you know, he's still finding a way to win.
Well, I don't think it much matters. He's just he's the greatest player on the planet. And, you know, it's hard to argue he's not one of the best, if not maybe the best, to ever play the game physically. Because, I mean, imagine a guy Karl Malone size that can handle the ball and play like Magic Johnson but has the athleticism of Michael. And you're going, that's just a freak of nature. And he's a student of the game, and he's smart, and he's carried himself well on and off the court. I mean, it's hard not to be impressed by the young man.
Now, David, you went to Kansas, played great basketball there in the late 70s, early 80s, and were actually drafted in the second round, 1982. What was that process like for you of going from college basketball to the NBA?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that for me, I was excited to be drafted by Cleveland because they were so bad that I thought I had a chance to really go in and do something. This is a bit of a controversial statement, but I would say that I played at a time where there was a lot of racial ignorance. There was beliefs that black people weren't smart enough to be quarterbacks, and you know, then Doug Williams came along later and proved that wrong, and there's such a ton of great black quarterbacks. And white people of certain sizes weren't athletic enough to play certain positions in the NBA. There was no such thing as a 6'8" white guard, white small forward that was slender. They wanted you to put weight on, and you know, the European came over and changed all that. It was Cyrus Marshallonis and Detlef Schrempf, Tony Kukoc, and now Kurt and Dirk and all those guys come in, and you stop and go, wow, there's 6'10", here's 7-footers that can shoot. Well, a 6'8" guard like I was at the time, it was hard for them to fathom that because they automatically pigeonhole me as not athletic enough. And I think, you know, time and styles make a difference. If I play today, you know, maybe I'm a Korver type because I really shoot, but they kept trying to say, no, you got to play powerful. And I'm going, dude, you could put all the weight in the world on me, but I can't play in the post. That's just not how I was designed to play. So it was a different era for that. And sometimes it's just timing makes everything, but it was fun. It was a dream. I'm originally from Indiana, and I was fortunate enough to be Indiana High School Mr. Basketball. So even getting a cup of coffee in the NBA was a cool experience. And then playing in the CBA for Phil Jackson was pretty cool. So I had a rich experience as a player.
David, what have you learned from your playing days that you can now relate to not only the guys you used to coach with the Brampton A's, but now as the leader of NBL Canada?
Well, you know, I probably have learned more as a father than I have as a player, and just as a father, and I was a high school coach for a long time. Today's young people are different. They don't care what you know till they know that you care. And if you don't love them, if you don't care for them, you can't MF them into success. You can't spare them. You can't put fear in front of them and scare them. And the one thing as a coach and now as a commissioner is I would hope all of our coaches would understand that process, that the days of berating, I mean, you just don't, could you imagine Steve Kerr just reading somebody in a riot act and ripping them up and down and making them feel bad about it? I doubt that this happened one time this year. On the contrary, he talks about how wonderful the Splash Brothers are and how Draymond Green is such an overachiever. And I mean, just these positive words of affirmation is really what makes young people tick these days. And I was fortunate to have four kids of my own that are all college athletes, or were college athletes, or pros, and I just recognized how some really responded differently. And as a father, you're a lot more sensitive. So I would say I probably learned more from that than even as a player, because the techniques that worked on me don't work today. Now, having said that, when I played for Phil Jackson in the CBA, he really used his roster well, and we would play 10 deep, and everybody got a fair chance to play. No matter what you did, you were playing your rotation. So if that was 4 minutes, 6 minutes, or 8 minutes, you were getting that chance, because that's just how he subbed back then. There were no Michael Jordans on our team, obviously, or Kobe's. So we were pretty evenly matched, and we ended up winning the CBA championship. So as a coach, my style was much more trying to get everybody's buy-in to play together and play their segments, but not anyone expecting to play the full 48 minutes.
Dave Magley joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Dave, going back to your high school days and some of the things that you mentioned you had learned because of, you know, some of the tensions, of course, being around the time of Oscar Robinson, of course, being an Indiana Hall of Famer such as yourself, what are some of the things that you could teach the kids today from what you learned growing up?
Well, I could tell you this. Today, I mean, yesterday, today, and forever, work ethic will trump just about anything. I mean, when you look at the routine that Steph Curry has before every game, his ball handling routine's the same. He gets out there and he shoots early before. And I would argue that to become a great high school player in Indiana, you better outwork a lot of folks unless you're just a freak athlete. Now, I'm a 6'8", and I was pretty athletic, but what made me unique was I could handle the ball and shoot the ball to be so big. And so I would jump center and bring the ball up the court as a guard, and then whatever the mismatch was, I'd play. And that only occurred because my older brothers, you know, kind of beat that into me. I'm the youngest, and I always played against older guys. Today's young people in the AAU system mostly play in their own age bracket. And I think that's not as healthy. I think that the days of when we played, you grew up wanting to get on the court and play with your brothers, and you might wait all night and only play one game when the streetlights came on. And then ultimately, if you didn't mess up, you might get played a little bit earlier, and eventually get picked in the first game. And there was so much pride in just holding the court in the park that those just don't exist anymore, because a young man will go out and play in his own age group and play 12 games in a weekend that don't mean anything, because if you lose, you're guaranteed 11 more games. And it's just a different day and age, and you've got to try to get that work ethic into it. And there's not many that have that as natural as Steph Curry does. And it's probably could be argued that the fact that he's the son of a dad that cares and parents that are together and push him, why he has such an amazing work ethic.
Very good point. I like the fact that you had pinpointed Steph Curry and his upbringing from being, you know, brought up from a professional player and his dad. You know, that says a lot. And, you know, when you're groomed to play, I mean, you almost have no choice, right?
Well, I you know, what happens is the good enough is not good enough. So when you have a father that says, listen, dude, don't believe the hype. Don't believe what everybody else says. Don't believe you're not big enough. Don't believe you're not quick enough. Don't believe anything. Just keep working, Steph. Don't worry about what anybody else says. I came from a small college and make it big. You can come from a small college and make it big. That positive affirmation from the father. And then when you see what's fun about watching them is you see parents. It looks like a college game. The parents are dressed in the colors and they're watching the game. You don't see that in the NBA. You don't see guys, you know, you don't see families around that, you know, the next generation families, but they seem to have it together, and they're there supporting their son. And man, he's just been able to thrive, and he's humble, and I just love the way he carries himself.
Yeah, you know, he's just a great individual, and of course, you know, family first, and you know, always bringing his kids around, and you know, you like to see those types of things. I do have a question for you as far as being the being the commissioner of the National Basketball League. Has that dawned on you that you are on the same plane as Adam Silver? And what type of information or, you know, guidance could you give to an Adam Silver these days?
I don't think I could give him anything. He seems to not make many mistakes. He's done a wonderful job since he's taken over for David Stern. And you know, I right now our goals are real simple. We have to have a league office that is that's self-sustained. We've not been able to generate a lot of league-wide sponsorship and generate revenue just from a league standpoint. So I've got to sustain that. I've got to create a really positive image for the league. It's an incredible brand of basketball. So you imagine the NBA without a lot of bigs, and that's pretty much who we are, because there's just so many good players in North America that you know, we have as many as 7 or 8 Americans on each team, and it's just a really fast brand of basketball. We play 48 minutes like the NBA, so you know our bigs are 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", and they can really, really run. So you don't have a bunch of lumbering guys up and down the court. So it's a lot of fun. It's a high level, a lot of high D1 kids, mid D1 athletes, and D2 kids that are really kind of guys that can you know, look past. And you know you can't tell without a roster the Canadians from the Americans because they all play a similar brand of basketball. So it's not like it's a big drop off. Like if you go to Europe, you know who the foreign players are almost always because they're so dominant. Not in our set. I mean, the good teams start 2 or 3 Canadians, and you really can't tell which is which. And it's just a cool thing. But we have got to shore up the league office, and then we've got to get each team profitable. And if we can do that, and you know we're entering our 5th year, which they say any league that can go 5 years has a chance to really make it. And I think that's exciting for us. Now we've got to build on that and create national and international recognition, which is what you all are doing for us tonight by even doing this interview, and we so appreciate it.
Well, Commissioner Magley, it's our pleasure to have you on and take your time. I know it's late back east. You recently were involved in the beginning of the Niagara River Lions, an expansion team for your league. How great is it to have a new team in Niagara, and what are your plans for the future?
Well, definitely expansion is on the forefront of our thought. And the Niagara owners are 3 independent young businessmen that have had success in their own right. And they've gone out and they've really taken great ownership. They got a great logo, a great mascot, a great field. They've got a brand new arena that seats 4,500, which is a nice size arena for a venue for our league. They're in a standalone market, which it's tough to compete in the greater Toronto area because you don't have standalone newspapers. So a city of 4 or 5 million is hard to advertise in because most of the newspapers, most of the people read the Toronto paper, not the Brampton paper or the Mississauga paper. So it's hard to really compete in those really major markets. But the Londons and the Windsors and the now Niagara, and then when you go out east, all 4 of those markets, PEI and Moncton, Halifax and St. John are standalone markets that have their own papers, their own media, and you can really become a part of the fabric of the community much quicker. So I think ultimately there's probably another team or two in Ontario on the east, and then it's going to be time to look out west. And you know, you've got great markets in Calgary and Edmonton and Vancouver, but if we could get 4 or 5 teams out there and start a division out west, that would really make us the big national league in Canada. And that's, I think, the ultimate goal in the years to come.
That's a perfect segue into my next question was, your league does seem to be an Eastern Canadian-based league, which definitely you have to be profitable. And you've mentioned that you want each team and each city to definitely make money and be able to be financially profitable, and Sean and I understand that from working in the IBL and being on the broadcast team for the Tacoma Thunder. And that was my next question is, big picture, do you see expansion into the Vancouvers, the Calgarys, and obviously that's on your mind?
Well, yeah, because again, I think you know we have some great news, we have some great sports networks here like TSN. And you know it's our own Canadian ESPN version, and they actually have joint ventures that they do with ESPN. And you know I think it wouldn't be a hard stretch for them to want to cover us as we become a more of a national league. And you're right, the reason we are you know segmented from an 18-hour drive from stem to stern in our league is because you know you have a little bit of flight time, but mostly it's a league that can be done within driving. We've got great rivalries because of the close proximity. You know, it's nothing for the London Lightning are probably our flagship team. It's had as many as 9,000 people, and it outdraws every team in North America that's not in the NBA, except for one of the D-League teams in Texas has a little bit more, like 50 more people a game. That's pretty remarkable for a league that's only 4 years old. For having a team to average over 5,000 people says that this thing can work, but it's got to work with local rivalries. It's got to work with within budgets so that every team can make a living. And, you know, so if you can to go out west, you've got to have four or five teams that can play the bulk of their league out there, and then we can do some crossover, and then there's just some cool things we can do. But, man, this is a big country. I mean, from the Maritimes to the West Coast is a very, very long trip, and it's not cheap. You know, airfare in the U.S. is much more cost-effective than it is in Canada just because of the sheer numbers of people and the sheer number of flights. So to do it right, you know, it would kind of be neat to mirror the CFL franchises. And those are pretty good towns that really support their CFL teams. So, you know, but they're a pretty good distance, and they only play one game a week. So it's hard when you're trying to play two or three games a week in those markets.
Now, Commissioner Magley, obviously there are some tough decisions that you have to make, and you're mentioning them right now. I guess what my question is have you ever seen a river lion?
No, but I've never seen a Jayhawk either. And well, the reality
that's a good
is that,
point.
You know, the Jayhawk is a mythical bird that was they were called the Fighting Jayhawkers, and they was picked up the logo for when and during the Civil War. They were trying to draw Kansas, which was a neutral state, into the war, and the rebels in Missouri went across and massacred a bunch of people in Kansas. And the way that they fought back was these Fighting Jayhawkers went back across the river and they fought back, and hence the name Jayhawk, and became a mythical bird in the cave. And it's the same thing. The river lion is a mythical animal that protects the Niagara River Valley. And it's on their coat of arms, and it's a pretty cool logo they came up with. And I love the neon colors because it's like the Seahawks colors. It's something that is hot and happening today that I think a lot of people will like and the kids will really like.
Well, yeah, well, Rock Chalk Jayhawk, and I'm sure that there'll be some type of a quote or saying for the river lion as well. Now, you have a league-wide combine coming up on June 28th in South Bend, Indiana. And what types of talent should we be looking at there?
Well, we've had, you know, last year, one of the kids that came from that combine was a kid named Tyshawn Edmondson. He played for us, and he was the newcomer of the year for the league. There's just so much talent in every part of our country and North America. And South Bend is a great place, A, because I'm from there, and I'm partial to it. But B, it's 90 miles from Chicago. It's 3 hours from Detroit. It's 3 hours from Cincinnati. It's an hour, 2.5 hours, 4 hours. That's 4 hours from Cincinnati, 2.5 hours from Indianapolis, 4 or 5 hours from Cleveland. You know, you can, in the Midwest, you can get to South Bend pretty darn easy. So, you know, we're expecting to see probably 100 kids, 100 young people. And when you do the math on it, there's 9 teams represented, so there'll be 108 jobs. No one has a guaranteed contract from the previous year. No one has a 2-year contract. So everybody has ideas of people they want to sign, but that doesn't mean that everybody that comes to these combines don't have a chance to be seen by someone and say, wow, I really want that kid. So it's not like it's just a money-grab combine that we're going out to try to make money. But we do believe if we want the proper exposure for our league, we need to do these combines all over North America. So you'll see them in Vancouver, and you'll see them in Calgary and Edmonton, Alberta. You'll see them in L.A. You'll see them in Florida and Texas. You'll see them. We're going to have 15 of them all over the East Coast, Atlanta, Florida. And that way we're kind of coming to young people, and we're hopefully going to save the cost of that. There's not, you know, typically there'll be people flying in for these deals. Well, that's great. But if we're going to have a whole summer series, then, you know, save your dollars. You'll pay the registration fee, but if we're coming to Texas anyways, don't bother flying to South Bend, wait till we're in Dallas. And that way we can see more young people, and we can really find that rock star that hasn't had the right opportunity yet.
Now, David, you and I were able to meet last July in Las Vegas at the Global Basketball Summer League. What types of talent does that event lend to the possibility of guys getting into the NBL of Canada? And will you be involved in that, or do you have to take a step back now that you're running the entire league?
So we had two of our better players came from that combine last year. I mean, came from that summer event that, Daryl Renshaw does such a good job with. We got Tom Granato, which was a 6'10 kid that was from Southern California. And he came in and really developed into a really nice player for us. And then we had Richard Amardi, who might have been one of the most talented young men in the league, a 6'8 Canadian kid that had played at Oregon, and that's where I saw him as well. And then we had another couple guys that I brought to camp that didn't make our team, but ultimately wound up in our league doing quite well. One was a young man named Daquan Brooks, and he did real well for the Moncton Miracle. So, yeah, absolutely, there is some good talent that came through there. I will definitely be around that this year, but not coaching a team. I know that the Windsor franchise is planning on coaching a team in there this year, and I don't know if Joe is from PEI has decided that yet. Joe Salerno, the general manager, head coach of the Prince Edward Island Island Storm, just took a team of 10 Americans, I mean not Americans, but 10 NBL Canada players to China, and went 13-0. So he was there 4 weeks, so he might be pretty worn out from that event. I know he'll be there scouting, but I don't know if he'll be coaching in that as well. But we really found it to be a good event, and I thought it was well worth it.
Commissioner David Magley, has that title sunk in yet?
You know what? Yes, it's starting to, because there's so much to do and it's exciting to get it done. And I had to get my mind around not being around the guys coaching every day, but that's okay, because I think, when you take a league that's just surviving, and hopefully if you can in 2-3 years look backwards and go, look at how every team makes money and the league is self-sustained, and maybe we have a TV deal and we have 10 or 12 or 15 franchises by then. And you look at that and you go, we've got a model for success that can be sustained for a long time. If we can do that, then I think, forget the monetary rewards. I think that my ego is strong enough that I would be pretty darn proud to know that I helped say grace over that I was able to work with an ownership group that cared enough about their league that they would do whatever it took and come together. They've been really wonderful in the past week and the month up to this working with me. And I just think that the unity that they're coming together is going to be powerful, because as these 8 individual owners come together at 9 to build, I think that there's a lot of wisdom and power and power and synergy, and that's what we hope we can do.
National Basketball League of Canada Commissioner David Magley, thank you so much for your time, staying up late back east tonight. And if there's anything else that Sean Boyd and I can do here with our radio show, or also reporting, analyst duties, play-by-play to help get your league to where you want it to go, please let us know. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, guys.
There goes David Magley, Commissioner of the National Basketball League of Canada.
Sean Wally, we just interviewed the Commissioner of the National Basketball League, period. That is exciting, man. I'm so stoked. And he's down to earth. I love it. That is cool stuff.
David Magley is a great guy. And look at this. I met him a year ago in July. He was the coach of the Brampton A's. Great guy. NBA draft pick. Played in the league. Played for Kansas, one of the best collegiate programs in all of the United States. And he was approachable, humble, very, very nice. There's an interview of us on YouTube, and here he was coaching the Brampton A's, and now, less than a year later, he is the commissioner of the National Basketball League of Canada, gracious enough to come on our show, trying to build that brand, and being able to relate to players 30-plus years his junior.
And an awesome sense of humor, man. He instantly went right in from the River Lions deal to the Jayhawk. And so I never really looked into, you know, if a Jayhawk was actually real. I mean, it's real to me. It's Kansas, for crying out loud. So, I mean, so yeah, he's got a great sense of humor.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the brush fade.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally from Hawaii. Sean Boyd in the 916 Elk Grove, Sacramento, California. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in former boxing great Tony the Tiger Lopez. Tony, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, thank you, buddy. No problem.
You know, Tony, it is my esteemed pleasure to have you here on the show. And, of course, we had Leo Clark, who is my cousin, on the show a little over a month ago. And, you know, we started talking about some of the, you know, the boxing greats and the pioneers in Sacramento. And, of course, you are one of them, along with my cousin, Henry Clark. And I guess you guys knew each other back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I grew up around the corner from Henry Clark, actually. I lived on PK and he lived on Kim Avenue. It was right around the corner from my house. And as a kid, I was 10 years old. And I just moved in there. And I found out that Henry Clark was living there. And he lived across the street from another Sacramento fighter, which was Will McMurray. So,
yes.
You know, I guess I was in the right neighborhood.
So what is that like being around a bunch of legends there? I mean, you guys are in the same neighborhood and you getting your career started. Now, of course, you had your first professional fight was, because I believe you're what, about 19 years old?
20.
Okay. 20 years old and fought a lot of fights in Sacramento. That was Juan Rodriguez right out the gate. So tell us about your first fight.
You know, it's so funny. You know, there's some stuff I remember. There's lots of it I can't remember. But, you know, that first fight, you always remember. And, you know, all I remember is, you know, I was excited about fighting. I was never nervous, never, you know, I don't want to say the word scared because I guess it's just nerves, right? But those went out like in the amateurs. So I was nervous. I was nothing. I just went out there. And I took like any other fight. You know, I figured he's only a human like me. He's only got two hands and two legs just like me. And I'm going to make him pay. And so I think that first one ended in the first round, as a matter of fact, you know?
Yeah, well, there's nothing better than knocking somebody out in the first round.
Yeah, you know what? even if you do, the trainer will find something to complain about, you know what I mean? So but that's always a plus for me. I really don't mind, you know, because it just keeps me on my toes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now let's fast forward here, because you have just been recently inducted into the Sacramento Hall of Fame. So, you know, kind of give us an idea on what that's like being a Hall of Famer and a legend here in the area.
You know, let me tell you something that a lot of people don't know. You know, I've been inducted 4 times already. I still haven't hit the New York one, so I'm waiting for that, I guess. But I've done the Sacramento Sports, California Sports, San Francisco Boxing, and there was another one. Northern California Boxing. And by far, I'm not saying it because I live here. I promise you, it is what it is. But by far, and there's 2 good ones, but Sacramento beat that one too. Because the really good one was Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. The California Sports Hall of Fame was a very, very nice dinner in Vegas. But the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame topped it. I mean, it's a great place. It's a great thing. Sacramento doesn't realize how many sports celebrities it has here. I mean, big time for sports celebrities. And it's sad that they don't get more people out there. You know, I mean, it's full, but it could be a lot more. You see what I'm saying? I mean, because we have so many great players, and you're talking basketball, baseball, boxers, soccer, you name it, they're out there, you know? And it's almost sad that more people don't find out about it or support it, because one day it's going to be gone if they don't support it, you know? Although they're doing good right now. I mean, let me tell you, they're not short of people. But me as a sports person would still love to see more people there, you know what I mean?
Tony, it sounds like you're beaming with pride for everything you've done and the other sports greats in the Sacramento area.
Well, yeah, because you know what, dude? I mean, really think about it, man. Sacramento has I don't know if people really think about it, but, you know, once you're into sports and you're doing something, you tend to find out that, man, there's a lot of sports people here, like even past and present, even from the past that weren't here back in the day, but are here now. I mean, you know, I keep telling people of business all the time. I go, you know what's so sad is, you know, they hire all these people to do these commercials and infomercials and all this stuff from other places when their business is here in Sacramento. And you have so much talent here in Sacramento, so many people that live in this area, that it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, you know, just, you got the Fred Budnikoff, you have the Greg Bonds. It's the Loretto Garza, we have just so many sports celebrities here. It's unreal, and they're hardly not used that much. You know, it's almost kind of sad. You know.
Well, Tony, for your boxing career, who were some guys that were your mentors and guys that you looked to help get you to that next level?
You know what, dude? Honestly, you know, I never. You got. I'm that different person. You know, I really didn't have. I guess if you want to call anybody a mentor, I guess I did. I would have to say Bobby Chacon. But I don't know if mentors beat up their mentorees for as long as he beat me up. But you know what? We had the same trainer for a while, which was Will Edgington. And the last 3 years of Bobby's career were the first 3 years of mine. And here's how my day went. You know, I'd wake up at 4 a.m. I lived on my own. I've been living on my own for a while. Now, at this time, I was 20 years old. I lived on my own. I worked at Muddock's Brick Company right there in Bradshaw. So I had to be there from 6 to 2:30 every day. So I would get up at 4 a.m., go do my run, come home, cook me a light breakfast, go to work, throw a brick around all day long. And then at the end of the day, I get up at 2:30, go meet my trainer, Will, at some, I think it's Renfrew Field right there off of, I think it's Auburn Boulevard. And then I would drive us both to Oroville every day, minimum of 5 days a week, you know?
Wow.
And for no pay. I mean, I did it because the pay for me was experience. You know, even fighters back then go, man, you're doing this for nothing. You're not. I go, man, no, dude, I'm doing this for the experience, you know? And so, and there was days and times, man, I remember this one time, we're training in his backyard. He had a nice gym in his backyard. And I'm putting on the headgear that has all the bars on it because I was beat up. And, I mean, I had swollen eyes. My nose was about 3 inches wide. I had fat lips. I mean, my head hurt, you know. I had lumps on the back side of my head, top of my head, side of my head. and Will Edgerton was putting on this headgear, and I kept going, ow, 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 because it hurt. And from the corner of my eye, I had my head tilted back, and from the corner of my eye, I seen Bobby. And he was in this corner. He looked at, I remember him looking at me, shaking his head and kicking his feet and punching out the ground like he always does for the fight, and he, even in the spring. So he kicked his feet out and punched towards the ground. And he looked at me and shook his head. And I, but, you know, you're young and cocky. I was 20 years old, you know, cockier than anything in the world. And I took it as an insult. So I thought to myself, I'm going to kick your, I'm going to keep coming back till I kick your butt. It may not be this week, this year, but I'm going to keep coming back. It just kicked me off, you know, because I was young and dumb. If, you know, and then, so guess what? I never missed a day. And I can't. And it didn't happen that year. And I kept getting my boo-boo every single day, but I just kept coming back. The next year, we moved to Yuba City, started training Yuba City. And even then, you know, Will, would, he'd have days, and then I would have days. You know, and you can see the change in Bob. Even to the third year, we trained in Sacramento. And when we were training in Sacramento, Will Edgerton would tell me, you know, hey, you know, kind of, you know, if you earn this time, take it kind of easy. And in my head, you know, I would just tell Will, yeah, but in my head, I'd be, oh, heck no. He didn't have no mercy on me. I'm not having no mercy on him. And I didn't. But you're young and dumb, you know what I mean? But I didn't tell you, man, Bobby, he, dude, he's something else. This guy can hit you with a, and he doesn't look like he hits hard, but oh my goodness. He had hands like, he had hands of steel, man. He really did. You know, it had a big 16-ounce gloves on it, and it still hurt. Like, shh. You know,
so
but it was,
so
a, it was a very, very much learning experience for me.
So basically, it was tough love that you were taking over the years that made you the fighter that you wound up becoming.
You know, it really was. And let me tell you something, man. I mean, you know, let me be honest, because my career is over. I can be honest now. Because during your career, you can't really say what's really going on, because then you sound cocky. But now that I'm old and it doesn't matter anymore, I can tell the truth. Because there are some fights I've had, and let me tell you something. I had my record was 59-8-1. I think it's 30. They have my knockouts on, but I think it's 39 wins by knockout, right? And then so out of all them fights, the two people that hit me the hardest was Tim Brooks from Sacramento and some guy from Mexico. He had, I don't remember his name. But I had lost the title, and I was having a fight in between before I fought another world title. This guy was 24-7 or 24-8, something like that, and he had 24 knockouts. But every one of his wins was by knockout. But whatever one of his losses, I think almost every one of his losses were by knockout. And this guy hit me in the first round in my shoulder, and I thought to myself in my head, I'm going, oh, crap, I better get rid of this guy. This guy, he can catch me. So I just jumped on him faster. I think I stopped him in the third, I think it was. But it's because he hit me so hard, I had to jump on him, you know. But besides him, too, you know, and I fought everybody in my time. I mean, Chavez didn't hit harder than these guys, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, people go, man, come on. I'm serious. I ain't going to lie about it. Why should I lie about it? You know, if they didn't hit hard, they didn't hit hard. But
yeah, so
I think that's because of boxing. You know, because I was already used to getting hit. Getting hit didn't bother me. You know, because when I first started sparring with Chacon, it bothered me. And it hurt. But as the months went on, it didn't hurt and it didn't bother me. So over 3 years of time, guess what? I'm used to it. It doesn't bother me at all. You know, so I'm serious, I give all the credit to Bobby. You know, that's he made me the person I am today.
Now, Tony, you had the chance that you had mentioned Chavez, Julio Cesar Chavez, that is. And, of course, that was the – would that be the toughest fighter that you faced? I mean, as far as wins and losses are concerned, I think it was like 91-1 or something crazy like that. I mean, just racking up wins. Was that the toughest opponent that you faced?
No. I think the toughest fight I had – it's fairly, no, there's two types. Let me explain it. There's two tough fights that I had. The first one is going to say Rocky Lockridge, without a doubt. That's the toughest physical fight I've had, without a doubt. I mean, it took me 30 days to get out of bed without feeling pain before I felt no pain getting out of bed. The other whooping I took was by John Molina. Now, that was a that was a boxer's butt whooping I took, because he moved so well and he was so fast, and he was resilient. He really was. You know, the first time we fought, how'd that go? I think we got a draw. I think we got a draw. So no, I beat him. I'm sorry. I won the first fight, and I won it. It's not like I won it big, but I won it. Okay, big deal. They started saying, oh, I got robbed, whatever. And so that's when I started having weight problems. So that's when the third fight, I moved up. But the second fight, I started having weight problems. It was getting hard to make the weight. But we fought. He beat me. Okay, it happened. Okay, big deal. But, you know, he's not better than me. You know, and I knew that. Well, you know, after the second lot, I had to blow out eye socket. So I got caught with an elbow. I think it was in the end of the second round in the second Molina fight. I got caught with an elbow in my right eye, and it blew my socket out. And so I went 8 more rounds with a blown right eye socket, you know. And so finally the referee stopped the fight because, I mean, shoot, he was hit. I thought he hit me so much, I thought the referee was hitting me, you know. And when they stopped, you know, so after that, everybody had me out for dead. They go, okay, he should retire now, go out the pastures. And, you know, even my promoters were telling me that. I mean, everybody was telling me. Even my close people were saying, hey, man, maybe he should retire. But, you know, to me, you know, I just got caught. You know, I got caught with an elbow in the eye. It happens. You know, he can't leave. I tell people all the time. I back then, I go, there's no way in the world he can leave. And they're going, well, you did a pretty good job. I go, yeah, but I blew an eye socket. You know what I mean? And so one day I started going to the gym again. And even my dad had wanted me to retire at the time. And so I thought, you know, well, you guys do what you want. I'm going to keep doing what I want to do. So I kept fighting. I think after I had my eye healed, like maybe 3 or 4 months later, I started going to the gym. Started going to the gym, started losing weight again, started getting tricked. And one day my dad shows up. And he goes, so I guess you're still going to fight? I go, yeah. I go, do you still want to be my manager? He goes, well, if you're still going to fight, I'm still going to be your manager. I said, okay, let's do it. So then he set up a third Molina fight. But see, what people don't realize in the third Molina fight was that fight started the day I started training. You know, we trained for 2 months prior to every fight. We trained every day, but 2 months really hard to train for fights. And so I told the promoter, I said, put me at the same hotel with Molina. I want to be in the same hotel that he's at. So we stayed at Caesars at the time in Lake Tahoe. And that's where we started training. And then we were at the same hotel. So every time I'd see him walking in the hallways. And now, mind you, this time he's the champion. I'm the challenger, right? So he's walking around. He's got a little group there and all those little cheerleaders with him. And he's walking by me. He's standing tall. He's smiling at me. And I'd walk by him and walk like a chicken. And I talked to him in Spanish. I said, you going to run this time? And I did this for the whole 2 months. At his breakfast, I would go by and make the chicken noise. While he was training, I would go by and make a chicken noise. Every time I'd seen him, I'd make a chicken noise, or I'd run around like a little chicken. And I know I look stupid doing it, but I was doing it to get in his head. You know, because I know for a fact that I cannot outbox. I could. I'm not a boxer. I can't outbox. What I was trying to do is get him into a street fight. Well, guess what? Fight time came. I think it was, oh, my God, who was that reporter? I can't remember the reporter's name, but he tells me, he goes, hey, he goes, what's your plan? I go, when the bell rings, I suppose we're going to go to war. He goes, I don't know what you've done or what you said, but Molina wants to kill you. I go, perfect. I'm thinking to myself, perfect. So I think that was like, well, maybe like two, the weigh-ins or something like that. I don't remember exactly when it was. It was like close to the fight time, a day or two before the fight. Well, the fight came out. Guess what he did? He came right at me. And, you know, the first round we started brawling. I thought, in my head, I'm thinking, I got this. The fight's mine. Third or fourth round, if you watch the fight even now, you can watch the fight. I'm nodding to my corner like, I got this. This is mine. And I knew it. You know, because I got him to fight. I could not box him, so I had to get him to a fight. And he wanted to fight me then.
Yeah, well, I mean, for those who don't remember the fight, of course, that went the distance. That was at Arco Arena. And, man, one of the judges had it. Terry Smith had it 114-113. Paul Gibbs 114-113. You must have really had Gerald Maltz in your corner 115-111. I mean, that was an intense fight that you – pretty much handled from beginning to end.
Yeah, you know, it's like what they say, you know, as a fighter, you understand you know, you want to win a fight, take it out of the judge's hands, knock him out, you know? And you try, and it's not going to happen every time, but, you know, that's what you do, you know, or that's what you hope to do. And, you know, because everybody sees something different, you know what I mean? And what lands on one may not land to another, you know? It's like when I watch fights, sometimes you're watching fights and they're going, oh, man, you know, so-and-so won the round. I go, no, he didn't. He didn't come close to winning that round. You know, because I'm counting punches that count. I'm not counting arm punches. I'm not counting punches that bounce off the top of his head. I'm not counting that. I'm counting solid, good, solid shots. You know, is what I count. You know, good jabs, head movement. I'm counting everything, you know. And the general public doesn't count all that. You know, they're just looking at who looks like they're winning, I guess. I don't know. You know? So I guess I got a different perspective from it, I guess.
Tony the Tiger Lopez joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Tony, what's it going to take for boxing to get back on the map and be something that everybody wants to gravitate to and what young athletes aspire to be great boxers? You know, after the whole Pacquiao Mayweather that didn't really – the hype was great, but the fight didn't really, you know – materialize to the level of the hype. So what's it going to take for boxing to get back to the great level it was back when you were fighting, and of course the mid-90s when Tyson and Holyfield and all those guys were great as well?
You know, I'm going to give you the honest truth, and if you, it's kind of a long answer, I'll keep it short as I can, but it's a fact. Watch this. It's never going to be as great as it was. You're gonna have, it's like I called the Mayweather Pac-Man fight. I called that months before it even came out. I said it's going to end one of three ways. One, the first way, which I think was going to be a Mayweather win, boring fight with sparks, a little sparks of it here and there, and that's exactly what it was. The second way was going to be a Pac-Man coming out, totally shocked me, but come out, balling like he always does, get in his butt, knocks him out in seven, knocks Mayweather out in seven. Well, he didn't do that, so that didn't happen. I go, and or, since it is in Vegas, if a Pac-Man wins, he wins no matter what, they have a rematch and it's $290 million. Well, the first one happened like I thought, you know. And so, you know, for boxing, see, the thing that is, what people don't understand is, name one sport that is like it was 10, 15 years ago. They're not. Okay, maybe 10, but not 15. 15, 20, it's changed. It's a different sport. All sports are. And that's because, I mean, if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty, it's because that's what parents are doing to the kids. Let's start with your grandpa. Your grandpa has your dad. He had his, you know, you're either going to be a dad or you're not. And if you are, you hold your son in your hand and you say, son, I'm going to give you a better life than I have. So then he grows up, son grows up, has another kid, does the same thing to his kid. Son, I'm going to give you a better life than I have. So guess what every generation is doing? They're spoiling the next generation. We're now at the bottom of the barrel. You know, let's use fighters because that's what I really know. They don't train hard. They don't want to get hit. They want to make $1 million today. Nobody wants to train. I don't train fighters now because I can't get no one to be consistent, and I'm not going to waste my time. Maybe it's because I don't charge when I train fighters, and I take the time out of my day to train these guys for 2 to 3 hours, and they don't. Some days they don't come. Some days they come. Oh, my toe hurts, my neck hurts, I broke my nail this morning, I can't come in. Come on, dude, really? You know, what a lot of people don't know is, you know, before some of my world title fights, I had a cut over my eye. Let me tell you, before the first Lockridge fight, I had a pinched nerve in my neck. And it was a week out, and I went to my chiropractor, and he fixed me up, and beat me up, and I was good for the fight. I never thought about not training or calling off the fight. I never thought about it. You know, today, people say, oh, I got a pinched neck, I got a pinched nerve, I got to stop. No, you don't. You know, you can work through it. You know, does it hurt? Of course it hurts. You know, is it painful? Of course it's painful, but so does getting hit. You know what I mean? So it's just a different type of fighters and athletes out there today. They're not as, and I'm sure the ones before me said the same thing about us. So, you know, I don't know.
Great. Great knowledge from Tony the Tiger Lopez. And Tony, I mean, man, we can talk about boxing. I mean, you have a plethora of knowledge, and you know, we just wish you nothing but the best. And now, where can our listeners find you these days? Now, you'd mentioned if you, you know, possibly train. Are you training at all? Or I know that you're doing some things with the with Bail Bonds, but are you still training and helping others, some of the upcoming boxers?
You know what I you know what I do now is I do train sometimes. Like I do, I train a lot of the fighters for the Battle of the Badges, and those are cops that are taking the time out of their day to put on an event to raise money for kids in their local area. So I do help the fighters train for that. You know, I do a lot of stuff with kids. You know, I train some kids. Right now, I'm not training anybody because I can't find anybody that will stay consistent. I have one guy coming from Utah at the end of next month. He's going to move here for me to train him. He just wants me to train him. I said, okay, but, you know, if you come here, don't move here if you're not willing to work, you know. So if you don't want to, you know, work your butt off, don't come, you know. And he goes, okay, I'm willing, okay. So he says he's going to come next at the end of next month. He's going to move here from, I forgot where he's, back east or somewhere like that. And so we'll find out. And, you know, I do, like right now myself, I'm an amateur referee and judge for USA Boxing. I do a lot of their shows in the Northern California area. This is my third year doing that. And what the neat thing about that is, I think a lot of the referees give too many accounts in the amateurs. I think they stop too many fights way too early. And I understand this for the sake of the kids. I understand it, but these kids aren't really that hurt or, you know, it's a fight. Of course you're going to get hit. You know, of course you're next to it. Your head's going to snap back a couple times. You're getting punched. That's the game of boxing. You know, the game, the name of the game is to hit, not be hit. So maybe they got to perfect a few things. But so when I'm referee, you know, I tell these guys, hey, look, you know, it's a fight, dude. Don't play hopscotch. You're in the wrong game. Because here, today, you're going to fight. You know, and everybody knows me. And you'd be surprised how many fighters ask, request me to be their referee. So, I mean, I've been doing it, what, 3 years? And I think I gave 2 standing eight counts. And I think I stopped. Maybe 3 fights, I think, maybe. Because, I mean, you know, you're there to fight. I mean, you know, fight, dude, you know.
Yeah.
Handle your business. Yeah.
Strong words of wisdom. Like
yeah,
strong
right?
Words of, you know, strong words of wisdom coming from Tony the Tiger Lopez. And, Tony, you know, we appreciate you for coming on to the show and bestowing that upon us. And you're not just a Sacramento boxing legend. You are a boxing legend. And we appreciate you for coming on to the show, man.
Hey, man, thank you very much. I appreciate it, man.
All right.
Tony, thanks so much for your time and insight tonight.
You got it, partner. You guys have a good night, man. Bless you.
All right. You too. There goes Tony the Tiger Lopez. And, man, I'm telling you, some great, great boxing knowledge, fought some tremendous boxers, and you know he's got a lot of knowledge on how to actually fight the fight. I mean, he's talking about taking some hits, and you know, of course, you have to get some victories in doing so. 50 wins, 34 by knockout and 1 draw. Tony the Tiger Lopez. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about this thing that's going on in Northern California called the NBA Finals. And we'll touch a little bit more on some more sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, Are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. Great thanks to NBL of Canada Commissioner David Magley and boxing legend Tony the Tiger Lopez for joining us on tonight's show.
Man, two excellent guests as always here on the Double. And of course, having Commissioner Magley talking about, you know, some of the rigors and the ups and downs. Actually, it sounds like, you know, he's really enjoying himself. A lot of ups with the National Basketball League of Canada. A pleasure having him on. And then, of course, Tony the Tiger Lopez, boxing great and a Hall of Famer in the boxing realm as well. So great show, Sean Wally.
Now, Sean, we've got big things for the Double S Express going on right now, which, hey, that's how we like to do things. You, not only you, but one of your sons is going to have a big day starting pretty soon, once the show is over, and then, of course, the real work begins on Tuesday.
Yes, you know, Sean, I'm so excited to have my son join what it is that we do, you and I do. And, you know, it's always great to try to raise your child to do the things that, you know, better than you've done them, and I believe that he will do that. We're going to be working the NBA Finals in Oakland and Golden State. And so this is his first go around. He will be what's called an IT runner. And so he's excited, just coming back from college. And of course, getting a chance to see some of his favorite players and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And of course, probably get a chance to see a little bit of the shooting rounds and practices and all those things. And yeah, that's going to happen as soon as we end the show. And we're going to prepare ourselves to head over and work hard for NBA TV, and we're going to be doing the world stream, but also have some fun.
Now, you mentioned a little bit that your son, that being one Devon Boyd, previously, of course, was here in Honolulu playing for Chaminade University, and there's now a little bit more of a recruitment process going on for one Devon Boyd.
Yes. I mean, we have the waves coming in right now. That was a big one. But yes,
the Pacific Ocean crashing into the coast of Hawaii.
You gotta love live radio. This is just awesome. We want all of our listeners to actually feel those waves as they come in. Gosh, That was nice and warm. Let me get my towel here so I can dry off.
Yeah, you know what that was? That was, you know, me trying to share with everybody what it's like to be on the beach on the shores of Waikiki.
That is the Samsung S6 at its finest. And so, but yeah, so, you know, Devon is being courted by a few schools. Man, those were awesome. I mean, were you standing in the water while you recorded that?
You know, Sean, I was not. I did not have proper proper foot attire. But what happened one time, and trainer to the stars, Rob Ortiz, can attest to this. He was laughing his head off. There was a wave that came up fast and strong, and I backpedaled probably the fastest I ever have to avoid the wave within a couple of inches. But it was definitely – it was probably that wave right there for sure. And it was just a great – a great, great evening last night. Rob and I had a fabulous dinner on the beach. And I don't know if you saw the pictures on Facebook, Sean, but we were able to cook our own main course. It was a community grill with a chef to assist. Just amazing. We had mahi-mahi, sirloin, and a full salad bar right on the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, jealousy, man. That's all it is. Oh, here comes a wave. Here comes a wave. Whoa.
Now, Sean, I know you're not a big fan of water. Did you get wet?
Well, you know, I think I swallowed some of that salt water, man. That man, that was a big wave coming in.
And this ocean definitely is salty, to say the least. But hey, all oceans are saltwater, so that's everybody knows that. But man, a big day at Chambers Bay today up in University Place, the Pacific Northwest, the 253, as one Tiger Woods got 9 holes in at the U.S. Open course.
So I am so excited about this as well. So, you know, the NBA Finals, after doing that, I will be heading up to Tacoma, Washington for the U.S. Open. And, of course, Tiger Woods there today. And it wasn't as warm as it was over there where you're at, Sean. It's a little cool, quite cooler, as a matter of fact. But I'm hoping that the weather will be nice in the next couple of weeks up in Tacoma.
So in the last week and a half, we have had Phil Mickelson try out Chambers Bay, and now one Tiger Woods.
So yeah, expect a huge barrage of celebrity golfers coming in, and you know there's an excitement up in Tacoma that, you know, especially, you know, taking a look at some of my friends and family's Facebooks, they can't wait. They can't wait for this to get off the ground, and it's going to be great for the economy as well.
Yeah, Sean, you definitely are having a great time getting to work the NBA Finals, the upcoming U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. And this past weekend, you got not one but two shots at analyst duties calling track and field for the NFHS Network.
Yeah, and of course, you know, out of all the sports that we talk about and we present, you know, track and field is definitely a first love, and that's what, you know, got me my scholarship in college. And so, you know, it was great. It was great to get a chance to see some fantastic runners. You know, I got a chance to see the 2 mile, the girls 2 mile, and got to see the third fastest 2 mile in the country this year at 10 flat for a young lady. Fiona is her name, and I can't remember which school she was from, but you know, it was just amazing watching her run all by herself. And, you know, it brought back some awesome memories of track and field for me.
Yeah, Sean, it had to be a great experience to be at UC Berkeley, not only for yourself to call events there, but for the high schoolers to be able to see what it's like at the next level.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these individuals have graduated from high school. They had their graduation just this past week. So to keep that focus and that concentration on track and field competition is very tough. But at the same time, as you're mentioning, there is, you know, that chance of looking forward and running in college. And a lot of these individuals have full scholarships slated and, you know, running at UC Berkeley, which is just was just an awesome venue, Sean. It, you know, they had the, you know, some of the Greek buildings and older buildings, because the campus has been around for quite some time, in the background. And of course, the beautiful mountainous look and majesticness in the back. And, you know, it's just a beautiful campus and a beautiful school, and, you know, gives these kids something to look forward to. Now, of course, Sean, you had the chance to, of course, you are, as we'd mentioned at the beginning of the show, you're getting ready to leave Honolulu, and now you're heading to New Zealand. Now,
you know, Sean, I got to say, that's how I spent the early afternoon, was dodging the waves and body surfing a few of them. It was a great time this afternoon in the sun, the sand, and the ocean, the waves here at Waikiki. It's been a great 4 or 5 days. And yes, tonight we head on a red eye to New Zealand. We'll get to Auckland. And the odd thing about that is we lose Tuesday, June 2nd. That does not exist for us. We will arrive in Auckland Wednesday, June 3rd.
Wow. And so you said how much do you lose?
We lose Tuesday, June 2nd. That will not exist. We cross the international date line on this flight, and it automatically becomes Wednesday. So that'll be very interesting. But we do gain that day back when we return to the U.S.,
Well, you're still going to have a great time in New Zealand, and you're with the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters. So I know that it's going to be fun all around. My goodness, Sean Wally, this is show number, what, 106?
Works for me if it works for you.
Hey, I was just thinking today that, you know, we're seasoned enough that we're going to have to X out all the show numbers, but I believe it is 106. Awesome show today, as you'd mentioned earlier. David Magley, the commissioner of the National Basketball League of Canada, and boxing legend Tony the Tiger Lopez. Show number 106 was an awesome one, Mr. Wally. I know that you're going to get some rest here as you get ready to head to New Zealand. For those of you who missed half of the show or wanted to listen to the show in its entirety, you can go to bbsradio.com/DSX to catch some of the archives, or you can go to www.s-express.com to catch us live. Next week, you can download the app BBS Radio and then click on Station 2 to catch us live 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or you can catch us on Stitcher and Twitter as well. Boy, I've just said a mouthful. Show number 106 in the books. For Sean Wally heading to New Zealand, and of course yours truly getting ready to work the NBA Finals, and Don, Doug Newsom, the engineer, you've been listening to on the Double with the Double S Express. This is a DSX LLC production. Enjoy the waves and have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.